This is Idaho Matters. I'm Gemma Caudette. Back in April, I talked with Jadish Patel and Paul Rowley, two researchers at the University of Idaho who were working on a cure for the coronavirus, thanks to a grant from the National Science Foundation. Labs across the country and around the world are still working to find a vaccine or a cure for the coronavirus. But what's the difference between a cure and a vaccine? Here's Jadish's answer and the rest of that interview.
So imagine this virus as being a ball and it is a spike. And this virus would go on to infect the human cell and it would wreak havoc. So our goal is basically to apply or find a shield to the human cell so that virus cannot enter into human cell. And this shield is a drug. You can imagine that as being a fragmented protein.
So then it sounds to me like, am I right in assuming that the cure could serve maybe as a backstop if a vaccine isn't found sooner or frankly, it doesn't work?
Exactly. So our solution is basically mid to long-term solution. So right now there are ongoing clinical trials on vaccines and there are some of the drugs that are already there in the market, like anti-malarial drug or the antiviral drug, antibiotics. I mean, those are in the clinical trial, and we hope that the clinical trials are successful and we get the cure. But for some reason, if that doesn't work, our cure would come handy at that point of time. So ours is more of a mid to long-term solution.
And then, Paul, you're a virologist and you have a background in HIV research. So how are you taking what you know from that area of public health to this search for a cure for COVID-19?
Yeah, so yes, you're right. My research background is in HIV, but the tools that we use currently to study HIV and aspects of the HIV life cycle can be readily adapted to study coronavirus. I've never worked with coronavirus prior to, the coronavirus pandemic that we currently have, but the techniques are the same. So, I'm essentially going to be using a similar viral system to monitor the efficiency of coronavirus cell entry. So in other words, how the virus particles actually penetrate into a human cell. Now, Dr. Patel in his computerized work will essentially identify lead compounds that will, like he said, shield the human cell from the virus. And so my lab will take those preliminary compounds that he will have whittled down from thousands and thousands of potential candidates to just a few, maybe a few hundred that we can test in the lab. And we'll screen and see if we can find one or two or maybe more that can effectively protect the human cell from the virus.
So, Paul, I'm kind of curious about how you would characterize the danger posed by HIV to public health and what we're seeing with coronavirus. Because I remember being a kid in the 80s when, HIV was at the forefront. And I mean, I think everybody was scared of it.
Right. I mean, I vividly remember in the 1980s in the UK where I grew up. They had TV ads with tombstones with AIDS written on the front and such, and this was mainstream TV. I mean, if you think about it, though, that was, of course, the early 80s. We didn't have anything anywhere near the technology we have currently compared to back then, because we weren't able to identify viruses as quickly as we can. We didn't have necessarily the right biological resources to characterize the spread or watch the spread of a virus. I mean, it's a very different world than it was back then. So, the ability for us to track the virus in real time, to disseminate information in real time, it's a big game changer. I mean, for many years with the HIV epidemic and people were dying, they didn't realize, and for a long time, they didn't realize it was actually a virus. So, things are definitely, we're doing much, much better at defending ourselves from infectious diseases today than we did, at the start of the HIV epidemic.
Yeah. Which, when you think about it, I mean, it wasn't that long ago, right? I mean, how much science has advanced?
Absolutely, absolutely. And from a scientific perspective, it's hard to keep up. Even as a research professor, it's literature is daunting and ever expanding, and we try and keep on top of it the best we can. But like I say, the ability for my lab to adapt. rapidly to now use all of our resources that we were using to study HIV to now pivot and study coronavirus. I feel that's not only a credit to the scientists that work in my laboratory, but also, again, you know, a testament to the prior support we've had at the state and federal level to build our expertise at the University of Idaho.
Well, and I want to, and either of you feel free to answer this question, because you both brought up, you know, the speed, right, of this virus. And then, so that means like resources are just essential to fighting this pandemic and to finding a vaccine, to finding a cure. So the National Science Foundation is actually funding this work. So how long was the process then to receive this grant?
Yeah, well, this funding is from National Science Foundation, but it came through an indirect route. So a professor in physics, Professor Marty Yetterberg, he has a $6 million grant from NSF. And that grant has a topic of genome to phenome. And our project, when we proposed, he felt that it is under the scope of his big grant. And nowadays, program officer from NSF allowed the PIs to give a leave away. So the PIs essentially can have the power to fund the project they like, as long as it is under the theme or general theme of the project. So Professor Martin Yetterberg was essential in funding this research. The money basically comes from NSF.
Yeah, he was in advocating for the project approach. That was essentially really important. And he believes in this approach. And so, yeah, we owe him a lot for his support, too, as well as the NSF.
We're talking with University of Idaho professors Jagdish Patel and Paul Rowley. They are part of a team that is hunting for a cure to COVID-19. So Jagdish, I'd like to talk about the timeline. I mean, obviously, the longer we go without a vaccine or a cure, I mean, more lives are potentially at risk. So when do you hope to have something for the FDA to approve?
Well, that'll be a long timeline, realistically. I mean, doing this kind of work in academia is a slow process, but our initial timeline to come up with a lead is 1 year, which is fairly quickly for academia. And this is thanks to our prior research working on Ebola viruses. So we worked on discovering inhibitors against Ebola virus. And that's why we have some of the groundwork already in place. And we can move quickly for this situation. And now, after 1 year, when we would have a lead, there are several stages of drug development. And those could be as long as 6 to 7 years. Or after 6-7 years, I mean, realistically, the FDA would have our application.
And I'm curious, too, how, and Paul, maybe you can take this, how could what you are all doing right now help prevent future pandemics?
Oh, that's one of the most fascinating things about the approach that we're taking. Typically, you know, we think about antiviral drugs, and we generally design things that will attack the virus specifically, mainly because viruses contain a lot of things that are utterly foreign to human cells. So it's easy to sort of use molecules that would directly attack the virus and leave the human host completely unscathed. However, though, if you directly target a virus, because they change so rapidly, it's easy for some viruses, HIV is a great example, to sidestep therapeutics through evolution. So in this case, targeting the virus is not always the best option. So in our approach, we want to target a therapeutic to attach to the human cell surface. And in this case, the virus then cannot see its cell surface receptor or binding site and therefore protect the human cells. Now, the fascinating thing about our approach is that the prior epidemic of SARS, which happened quite a few years ago now, it was also, of course, the coronavirus. But that coronavirus and the current coronavirus that's causing this pandemic both use the same cell surface receptor. And more interestingly, they both bound to the same site on that surface receptor on the human cell. So our our therapeutics that we hope to develop would protect against all future coronaviruses that would potentially use this same receptor. So it would be a broad spectrum inhibitor.
As scientists, what gives both of you hope, either about the research you're doing or even how quickly the scientific community, I mean, around the world, responded to this crisis?
I mean, I think the funny thing is it feels a lot longer than it actually has been since right. the start of this pandemic. I think it's because we're all stuck at home
I would
trying
agree.
To do the best we can with a very, very bad situation. I mean, compare it to other pandemics that have ripped through the world in the past, 10, 20, 50, 100 years. People forget that certain pandemics would last for years and kill, hundreds of thousands of people. I'm not saying that the current situation is great, but I think we're dealing with it in the world today much better than we did previously. And like I say, the resources available for scientists like Dr. Patel and myself to engage in this kinds of frontline therapeutic discovery and research is, the capacity is so much greater. Thanks to the funding that we receive and the support from state and federal institutions.
And that was my interview from back in April with Jagdish Patel and Paul Rowley, two researchers at the University of Idaho working on a cure for the coronavirus. More Idaho Matters next.